I have the motivation, but I also have the work ethic to get it done. You have to have some sort of calling there, some sort of desire that's really calling you forward. But then we get addicted to it and we wonder, who are we if we don't live into that level of drive from like kind of an intensity perspective?
Welcome to the Unstoppable Woman podcast, where we explore what it means to create a truly exquisite life. I'm your host, Amira Alvarez, inviting you to be part of these intimate conversations about feminine ambition, what lies beyond traditional notions of success, and how to answer the question, what's next when you've already achieved so much? Let's dive in.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Amira Alvarez. I am the founder and CEO of The Unstoppable Woman, a coaching company dedicated to the ultra successful woman. And I'm also the host here on the podcast, where we're having a new conversation about ambition, power, and success, and how to unlock your unique power as a woman to build an exquisite life. Today, I have an amazing woman on the podcast as a guest. Her name is Dr. Amber Selking. Dr. Amber Selking, leveraging her background as a Notre Dame soccer player and her PhD in sports and performance psychology, founded the Selking Performance Group to enhance performance excellence in individuals and organizations through the science of high performance. Her work spans high performance consulting for publicly traded companies and teams like LSU football, where she helped them become the winningest team in that program's history. She's also the author of Winning the Mental Game, the playbook for building championship mindsets. Amber and I spoke in great detail about the idea of seasons in your life and career, the identity of the driven woman, and how selection is so key and one of the key components to success in life, and so much more. You're going to love this episode. So without further ado, let's get into the episode. Welcome to the podcast, Amber.
Thanks so much for having me on. I'm excited to be here.
Tell me the brief journey of Amber. How did it go from soccer to corporate to you have a consultancy degree, right? Like you have all these points in your life, like all of us. We all have a journey that we've been on, and we all have these salient moments of success and pinnacle places that we're like, oh yeah, that was an achievement and that was an achievement. But I'm really interested in what were the spaces in between? Like what got you from one place to the next and the transition moments? Can you tell me your journey from that perspective?
I was blessed to be raised in an awesome family in a small town in rural America, northeastern Pennsylvania. And in as rural as we were, I had a really cool upbringing in terms of my family had McDonald's franchises. So it's a very like entrepreneurial, business-based family business environment. I was raised in the country, like I said, so I raised livestock animals. So that's a whole other like group of people and population that you get to associate with. Sports were really important to me. I was a soccer player growing up. And so the whole athletic world, my faith is really important to me. And so, you know, being in sort of those environments with people that are thinking about faith and eternity and perspective and spirituality in different ways, you know, the fact that we got to, I kind of had a foot in all of those areas were, I think, an important part of seeing different types of people working on very different types of things, but with an undercurrent of drive and hard work and caring about people that was very consistent through those different domains. That ultimately led me to want to play soccer at the Division I level. So I had a chance to do that at the University of Notre Dame, which was a critical part of just my identity on that season of life as being an athlete. And so when soccer was taken away from me due to injury, I had, you know, multiple knee surgeries and went through this identity crisis at, you know, the ripe age of 19, you know. And so thankfully I was able to wise enough to stay at Notre Dame to graduate from there and decided to go into corporate America. And got my first opportunity in a global manufacturing company in an HR rotational role where I was moving every 3 to 6 months to a different one of our locations around the country. And so yet again, exposed to very different types of people, you know, from rural North Carolina to Detroit, very different industries. But again, this element of people that are working really hard and trying to achieve something. And so in that environment, I really started asking the question of, well, what goes to human high performance, right? Because in sport, I would see people that were really talented, but maybe lacked the drive and so never really optimized their potential, or people that maybe didn't have as much talent, which was me, but that worked really, really, really hard and sort of always seemed to outkick their coverage. There were people like that in business, just like there were in sports. And so that's what got me asking this question of what really leads to human high performance. And that took me to grad school. I did my master's out at the University of Denver and then went on to get a PhD in applied sport and human performance psychology at the University of Missouri. And so that's what became the catalyst for this next season of my life, which has been about helping individuals, sports teams, and business organizations really understand the power of mindset at the neurological scientific level and the importance of leadership in terms of optimizing and maximizing the people within your area. And so that's what I get to do every day now. You know, I'm a executive at a global manufacturing company today working on culture and leadership in that space. And then I serve as the mental performance coach for LSU football. And so get to be on the sideline and locker room to the boardroom, you know, looking at these elements and not just consulting about it and talking about it, but really living it embedded in two really big organizations to make that work. And then, you know, get to do podcasts like this and do some keynotes around this topic that is more the consulting side of it. But it's been fun to, you know, see how starting off in this town of 1,200 people where I grew up, but in those different spaces have been able to light the beauty and the power of the human mind to help people be great.
I love it. I love it so much. So there's a lot to dig into there. So I want to touch on McDonald's. I want to touch on identity as a soccer player and like the shift around that injury. I want to talk about like the spirituality part, the faith part, like looking at an eternity, right? Mm-hmm. As part of who we are as humans on this planet and what that, how that speaks to our performance and human potential. And then I also want to talk about this idea of drive. I think this is so important. So actually, why don't we start there? Who knows if I'll get back to all the other ones, but we'll see where we go. Drive. This is one of those things that I think is, I'm going to share with you my perspective and the kind of queries that I've been exploring around this. And then I'd love to hear your perspective and like how you approach it. So I heard what you said when you were looking at your soccer performance, you know, like I might not have been the most talented, but I had work ethic, right? I had drive. And drive to me is this combination of work ethic and motivation, right? That like I have the motivation, but I also have the work ethic to get it done. It's like this combination. Cause I wonder, can you work hard without having the motivation for that? I'm not sure, but you have to have some sort of calling there, some sort of desire that's really calling you forward. And yet I feel like that works to a large degree for a certain amount of your life. And then you realize, I want it to be more spacious. I want it to be easier. I don't want to feel that level of urgency all the time. But then we get addicted to it and we wonder, who are we? Here's that identity piece. Mm-hmm. Who are we if we don't live into that level of drive from like kind of intensity. A push intensity perspective. So those are the queries that I've been having, right? I have a particular way of solving for that, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on like, how do we keep our performance at the highest level, at that level of excellence without the erring on the burnout or the lack of, good juju, for lack of a better word, right? In your life and business.
Yeah, I think it's a very complex question, obviously. And that's the beauty of life and human high performance. But, you know, I think broadly speaking, life is a series of seasons. And I think a lot of times people allow seasons to last too long in their lives. For example, you know, my husband and I, We didn't have kids. We just had our first baby 10 months ago. So she's, 10 and a half months. She's incredible. She's a, talk about a high drive little human being. She is not only walking, trying to run now, and just like the relentless effort that she has towards, you know, walking is incredible. But prior to her, you know, we didn't have kids and we knew we were kind of in this optimal work season. And so we deemed this season of our lives as a season of work. And we both invested a ton of hours and knew that there would be late nights. And I mean, there was a season where I was working, you know, with a professional football team and a college football team. And so I was on the road from Tuesday through Sunday every week. And we knew that wouldn't last forever, nor could we sustain it forever. But we would have constant check-ins of like, are we still in this season of where we need to be, you know, grinding this much in terms of just hours. I mean, we loved what we do. So there was a joy about it, but it was a lot of time. And so I think that it's important for us to understand like what season are we in? And so therefore, what does hard work and what does excellence look like given the season that we're in? And that's, I think, a really important conversation for people to have because it looks different in different seasons. We are now in a season where we have this beautiful baby girl. And so what needs to change in our lives to match the season that we're in, knowing that the main priority and excellence looks like being present parents who are able to like play with her and put her to sleep and be attentive to her needs and growth. Like you can't do that when you're buzzing 24/7, you know?
Yeah.
And so understanding what season you're in, recalibrating what does excellence and success look like in this moment, and then really understanding your why, you know, your sense of purpose for that season. Yeah. And I think when I look at those three elements together, it's helped me navigate, you know, different seasons of work and high performance because it's all intense and it's all important, but that manifests in different ways, again, given the outcomes that you're after. In a simple analogy would be like, you know, there's a difference between driving a golf ball and putting a golf ball. There's excellence in both, but there's a different level of intensity, a different length of your swing, a different speed at which you torque your body. And yet you can be really good at both of those things, but you need to make some adjustments.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great analogy. Hey there. I just want to take a quick moment and ask, what's the thing holding you back from your own success? The hidden shadow or saboteur potentially at play for you. And do you know how to find it? We often have that one thing keeping us from our next level. And it's not always the strategic move. It's often the internal one. I found in my own journey of success in building my exquisite life, it's what I call a core wound or loyalty pack. What's that? I share more at theunstoppablewoman.com, right on the homepage. Find out more at theunstoppablewoman.com. Now, let's get back to our episode. What role do you think values plays in identifying what season you're in, right? Like you said, I want to be fully present to your daughter, right? And, you know, we all are challenged with presence in this day and age, right? Did that just come to you? Okay, yep, this is how I define success in this season? Or did you sit down and think about it and connect it to your values? How did you personally go about making that decision? It seems, I say this, Amber, it seems like an obvious one. Obviously you want to be, you know, present to your daughter, but oftentimes people are really pulled, right? They have lots of ambitions. They have the ambition to be a stunning, great mother, parent, and a stunning, great CEO or stunning, great VP or stunning, great founder, right? Like they have multiple drives and they don't want to give up like one for the other. So how do you calibrate that?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of people want this to like happen fast. Like, oh, you become a parent. Now you prioritize. Well, no, because it's important to me to be a professional. It's important to me to have a career. And so for all that season that came before of hard work, it laid a foundation that allows now for some variability and flexibility in our schedule that allows me to do both. Like I'm still on the sideline of every game. Like I still work with this company, but it looks a little bit different because there was this foundation that had been set for years prior. And I think that's, again, goes back to that conversation of like, what season are you in? And are you living in that season now? Because I could have been like, but I want to be a mom and I want to. And so then I could have shirked some of the time and energy and intensity that was needed prior to the season that we're in now to allow this one to happen. And then on top of that, you know, like we talk a lot in companies, right? Like, what's your vision? What's your mission? What are your core values? What are your standards of behavior, operating procedures? And, you know, but do we ever think about that for our families? And so, you know, my husband and I have a vision statement and a mission statement and core values and standards of behavior that we set, you know, year one of marriage. And so we were able to go back to that. Now we actually updated that. Okay. Well, now as parents, what things need to evolve or what do we need to add that we might not have been thinking about when we first, you know, were married. And so it then becomes a really great recalibration point and it's a gut check, you know, and I'm not saying we live this perfectly and whatnot, but man, we're trying and we're having those intentional conversations. And then the other piece is, you know, humans are designed to live in community. And so who are the people that you have around you that I think allow you to have it all? I mean, I'm a believer that you can have it all. Ask my husband.
Good. Yay. Okay. So let's pause there for a second.
Yeah.
Because you're speaking my language. Like, I don't believe in denial or that, like, we can't. I have 100% faith that like if you desire it, you can create it. You can have it. You can receive it. And like, what do you do when you're torn? I have a particular lens on this that I think it's not functional to feel guilt. And yet, like, so many people are torn between, do I do this or do I do that? I heard you say, you know, we have core values, we have our mission statement, we have, you know, we've clarified a lot of things that allow you to make better decisions and understand where you're, when you're on track, off track. Do you ever feel torn between your professional life and your personal life? Question number one. And then if that's the case, how do you navigate that? What comes up for you? If you're honest about it, like, where does the being torn come up? And like, how do you navigate it?
I mean, I think it's just hearing what the world says, you know, and like, you know, a lot of times we're like, oh, like, how do you do both? Like, how do you feel about being a mom and working? And it's like, there's like a subtle, you should feel a certain way about
that's
this.
It's not so subtle. Let's just say that's not so subtle. That's like a underhanded, like,
judgment.
Bag of guilt and judgment. Right. Yeah. Like,
yeah. And so
let's pause there. I keep interrupting, but I think this is a really important topic. And I think, like, for me, when I hear that, like, that you're getting that kind of response, and I know that you're not alone in this, my lens on it is the person who's giving that either hasn't clarified for themselves what's important for them, and they're torn, they're confused, they're feeling guilty. And instead of owning that and cleaning it up for themselves, they're throwing it on you and seeing if you're going to catch it. I hope you just let it go right past you. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And you can mostly, but there's like, you know, there's those days or those moments or, you know, because when you do have a lot going on and you're up in the middle of the night a couple times, like, you there's only so much willpower and mindset, and that goes back to community. And so it's like having conversations with my husband about, like, we're doing the right things, right? Like, tell me why this is good. and letting him inform my thinking. And then I think it's, for me, it's also going back to like managing your self-talk, exactly what you said, like really understanding, like, no, that's a them issue. That's not a you issue. And, you know, we are doing the right things for her right now. And so I think that's the other thing, like being willing to be really flexible on, like, let's just use this again, the parent mom thing of working mom situation of, like, for where she's at right now, this is working and this is good. Now, might things change? Yeah. In which case, we might need to change. But we went, you know, we worked really hard to find a really phenomenal caregiver that helps us with her. And, you know, my husband's like, okay, well, we have to pick someone on all of the interviews that we've had. And I looked at him and I was like, no, actually I don't. Because at the end of the day, if I don't find the right person, it will be me. And that's like, she is my priority right now. And so if we don't find someone that I feel 100% confident that can help us develop her physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, then I'm going to be the only one, like me and you will be the only ones doing this. And so we'll figure that out. But by the grace of God, we found her at the right timing. And so I think, you know, back to the point of, I do think you can have it all, but it takes a lot of work, a lot of patience, a lot of perseverance to do that. I mean, I guess that's how we've navigated it. Managing your self-talk, surrounding yourself with the right people, and knowing that you need to be flexible and adaptable, just like you do in sports. You know, like great quarterbacks are great because they can call the audible. When they see things change on the field, they can make adjustments quickly to still execute the objective. And that's the approach that we've taken, you know, on this parenting journey for sure.
Yeah. What I heard in that little story was a nod to perseverance, but also a nod to faith, right? Like this is my standard. This is what I'm going for. I have a desire. It's a standard. It's not, there's not doubt in that, right? There's 100% like, I know what I want. This is what I want. This is what I'm getting, right? There's something mama bear about that, but there's also, that's a very sort of masculine kind of thing. It's like, this is my goal. This is what I want. This is where we're going. And yet there was an allowing. I talk a lot about the masculine and feminine energies, but then there was an allowing for, oh yeah, the right person is coming. I am going to hold my faith. I'm going to hold that very clearly. I'm not going to drop my standard, go into doubt, go into worry, go into fear, but I'm going to hold that clearly for myself until I can make it manifest. And to me, this is a beautiful example of like the clarity of the goal, right? That's very masculine, clarity of the standard, the structure, but also the allowing, right? Like, you're going to allow that to come to you to be able to receive it. And you're not going to lower your worth and say, oh yeah, I'm going to just compromise here.
Which is totally so easy
to do, you know?
It's so easy to do. But every time I look at my husband, I'm like, and remember, like, we're a manifestation of that. Like, I mean, I had like a very clear, I mean, I'm a strong female, and like one of the only things I wanted, well, not only, I want a lot of things, but like one of the things that I wanted was to be married to a man that I trust to lead me. You know, I lead like everything else. Like, I wanted to be with a partner that I trusted to lead me. And at the same time, like, understands me and lets me, you know, how I operate. And so I thought I would meet him a lot sooner than I did, but I didn't meet my husband till I was 29. 9 years old, you know? And so every time I look at him, I'm reminded that, and guess what? We have an awesome marriage. Like, do we go through stuff? Yeah. But it's like with the person that you want to go through with. And the, you know, the more executive coaching that I do, the older that I get and more relationships, and from my family to people I observe, selection is such an important thing. Like, a lot of the executives that I work with, they are either freed to be their best because of the significant other that they have, or a lot of their limitations and stress and angst comes from the partner that they have. And I just think, to your point, many people are, they give up too soon, you know, and they're like, well, I'm never going to find that. So they compromise. And then that compromise shows up time and time again in every aspect of their lives. And so I'm just a huge believer that like selection is such a critical element.
I put little stars on my notepad here when you said that selection is key. And I got like all the, like, my whole body was like, yes, 100%. I want to talk about a number of things there. One, selection is key. You were referring to it in terms of a partner, a person in your intimate life, right? Your personal life. But we could explode that concept, and like, selection is key in whatever you do.
And 100%.
And that then begs the question, what then diminishes someone's self-trust? And I have a lot of theories on this, but I think that So let's go back into your story and kind of splice things out, because you were like, I thought I was going to meet this person earlier, but I'm a strong woman and I wanted a strong man. I wanted someone who could, you know, not control me, but take that lead, right? Take that masculine lead. And I can hear people, there are a lot of women going, what is she talking about there? But we'll get there. Okay. But that is a really interesting place that you had the confidence early in life not to compromise, not to, you had the compass, you had the clarity, you had the worthiness, if you will, to and the faith stay true to the thing that you desired. Did you have a clear vision of what you desired? Was that part of it?
Like in terms of like what he actually looked like, not really, but
no, like who he was. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Very much so. Very much so. And, you know, I think that's important. I had clarity on what I wanted of him.
Let's just go back to like, how did you learn that? Cause that's such a key concept, to know who you are. Okay. Like if you go back through your history, point to something to me, like, how did you learn that?
You know, I had a babysitter, a nanny growing up that like is like my grandma. I call her Grams now. She's 87 years old. She's amazing. But her faith was really strong. And so we would pray about everything. Like when things went well, we'd like celebrate. Thank you, Jesus. And when things weren't going well, or I made a poor life decision when I was five, like we would ask for forgiveness. And we just like talked a lot about who I am as a child of God and a child of the King, you know? And so very early on, like it was about like who I was made to be. And then like the choices that I made, like, did that align with who we thought that I was, right? And so I was just blessed, I think, to have these conversations at a young age. And my mom always jokes, she goes, you know, I was really glad you found Jesus at a young age and I let you play a lot of sports, because if not, you probably would have wound up in jail, you know, because she's like, you're just so intense and so aggressive and like all of these things. And so, you know, I think that was just something that was in my vernacular and in my mind and heart at a young age that thankfully, and then over the course of time, like I was really fortunate to have people that encouraged who I was instead of tried to stifle it. As a strong young woman, like I remember my first grade teacher, Mrs. Lewis, like she was a strong woman. And so she celebrated me and my two little girlfriends that like wanted to lead everything in first grade, you know, instead of being like, hey, you three need to chill out. And like, you know, so I just continued over the course of my life. And I feel really grateful for that. But even though like, but I think people can learn this. And I think it's an important conversation and question for and journey for people to go on to really understand, who am I? How am I wired? What is really important to me? What do I see my future looking like? And if my future looks like that, then what choices do I need to make today to make sure that future can happen? It's hard, but it's worth it.
So one of the things you said in this last, you know, bit of your history was that your mother was like, cause you're really intense. Okay. And as an intense woman, right. I remember, you know, people saying slow down. Right. And like strangers, like wondering like where I got my kind of whirling dervish energy, right, to go and do life and really pursue success and ambition. And I had a lot of drive. And I'm now, we were talking about seasons, I'm now in a different season than you're in. I still have great ambition, lots of things that I'm creating, manifesting, bringing into this world, building. And I am choosing to do it with a different calibration to that intensity. And that's not let me restate that, because that's not entirely correct. I still have incredible life force, power, drive, intensity, but it's without a scarcity around time anymore. Mm-hmm. It's like I'm allowing for so much more ease and spaciousness and flow to the way that I'm creating. And it's been a really beautiful evolution and unfolding. And I think I bring that up because I'm curious to know whether you have, I think there's a little bit of an age difference between us. I'm 53. I don't have a clue how old you are, but you just had a 10 and a half month old baby. So you're in a different age bracket than I am. Though you never know, it's not impossible, but you know, most people don't have babies at 53.
Well, I'm not 40 yet, but I'm closer to 40 than 30. So,
okay, there we go.
Yeah, so, 36.
Yeah. So when I was your age, I had like all this ambition and drive and focus and all of that. And I wasn't thinking necessarily about ease and spaciousness and creating success from a different level of consciousness per se, like just mm-hmm. having, we talked earlier about having a standard, right? You had the standard for the person who was going to take care of your daughter. You know, like I now have a standard for how I want my business life and my personal life to look that doesn't diminish my love of creating success in my life, but yeah. does it with less of this time scarcity drive behind it. Where are you at in that continuum? Where does spaciousness and ease fit into your created life, like how you're creating success in your business life and in your personal life?
You know, it was really interesting. I studied abroad in Spain when I was a junior in undergrad, and I loved it. Like, I loved the afternoon siestas. I loved the long meals. I loved the going out till 5 in the morning and like all of the things. And when I came, I was like, the Spaniards say like, oh, no pasa nada. Like if you drop something and it spills, you're like, oh, I'm sorry. And they're like, ah, no pasa nada, which literally means like nothing passes because of what just happened. Yeah. And so, you know, that's kind of how they live. Oh, no pasa nada, you know? And it's like, oh, it was an hour late. No pasa nada, which is wonderful. And yet their economy is not in a great spot. And so, you know, when I came back to the States, I had an internship with the Johnson & Johnson company in Jacksonville, Florida, Vistacon. It was incredible. And I remember like walking into this fully furnished corporate apartment. I was going to live like by myself in the summer, you know, working in a big company for the first time. And I was raised in, again, an entrepreneurial family where it was like work from like sun up to sundown, work at the, you know, we just worked all the time. And so I was like, man, I really want to be intentional about intersecting the efficiency and productivity of the US with the no pasa nada, people are important energy of Spain. And so that was like the first time that I got to really be intentional about trying to make that the rhythm of my life. And I thought I did an awesome job at that at 20, whatever I was. And I've held on to that over the course of time. And again, and yet I'm very aware of the seasons that we're in or the people that I'm around, whether that's a macro season or a micro season of like, let's say it's strategic planning season in the business. Like it's just a lot. I guess I know I don't have as much space in there as I will in 10 years from now and 20 years from now, but I do think it's a really important part of being able to enjoy the seasons that you're in, even when there's a lot of output. And so, you know, right now, a lot of people are like, okay, cool. Like you've got these, the football, the company, like your daughter now, like what's next? And I keep saying like, nothing's next. Like I am in this season right now and it's so good. And I don't have clarity necessarily on what the next season is going to be like. And that's okay. Like I feel like, but you have to say that to people because people mm-hmm. just expect you to be like, okay, what's the next thing on the to-do list? What's the next accomplishment that you're going after? And it's like, there's this a way of being right now that I'm really excited about and getting to go, you know, deep with the people and the environments that we're in and with Eliana. And it's just really fun. So I don't know. I mean, I know I'm not fully into space yet, but it is something that I do think is really important. And I want to be known as somebody that like people feel like I care about them when I'm in the moment with them.
Yeah.
And you know, when you're too busy and too distracted, you're not. And I, you know, I gut check myself a lot in that. And I'm like, hey, like, I'm sorry. I was thinking about 12 things. So I'm like, oh, really? Cause you made me feel like you were only listening to me. And I was like, well, good. Cause I wasn't,
yeah.
You know, so
truth and transparency there, right?
Totally. You know,
you
so
know what
you
know what I love about what you just said is that you're enjoying the journey. Like, I'm always about, okay, well, what's the next desire? What's the next thing that I'm creating in a very sort of sensual way? But still, there's always like, there's like, I'm enjoying this and I'm leaning into the next thing. And I hear you really taking a solid dropping in, you're breathing into this moment, like you're really enjoying this moment and you're not letting life pass you by, which is fantastic, right? Because we can, in the sort of seeking the next thing, the next ambition, the next goal, kind of lose sight of this present moment. Has presence always been, you know, I love the nopassanata integrated with the ambition and the drive and the work ethic in the United States, because there's something that incredibly valuable about that, right? We produce, right? Has presence always been a key aspect of your life, even before going to Spain? Was that part of your upbringing, or did you have to teach yourself? Was Spain like the turning point that taught you that?
I would say I probably wouldn't use that word, but I'm a very like hands-on, engaged person. And like when you raise animals, right? Or I mean, that's just, it's not like you're on your phone or behind a screen. Like you are like with them doing like tangible work. As an athlete, like you are like doing physical work. And so there's a connectivity that comes out of that, an engagement that comes out of that. And like, you know, we were raised, like, I mean, we had chores growing up and my mom would always say like, if you've got time to do it twice, you've got time to do it right. And so like, you know, you had to actually clean, you couldn't just like
clean around, right?
Yeah. You got to like spray it and wipe it and then make sure that you got it all, you know? So there is this like level of just being that I think has always been a part of how I've operated, but it's
Let's talk about that, Amber, because I so relate to that. I'm like, how is that? That's not a job well done. Like, I will do it with myself now. I am that voice in my head now, right?
Same.
And so like, nobody's watching. Nobody cares. No one's in my space, whatever. It's like, I'm the only one that's going to see. But I have a level of excellence that, you know, is part of my identity. And for the most part, I feel like that has serve me well. I now have someone who cleans my house for me, so I don't have to do that, which is great. I'm very, very,
I have to
very
be a little less critical though, because we do too. And I'm like, why didn't they do the baseboards? You know?
But like, that's a blessing, right? And I think when it's misapplied, that standard of excellence, tell me through the lens of the high performance sort of mindset, if that level of excellence is misapplied, I think what it looks like is putting great effort after the quote unquote wrong things. I mean, there's never an ultimate wrong because you can redo it, but like that you're putting effort, that level of excellence towards something that's not important, is not going to move the needle in your life or your business. And moving the needle might be about the big goal, or it might be about the presence that you have with someone. That's a matter of discernment. But like, how do you help people learn that this positive trait can also have a shadow side, and not just this one, but like all, I guess,
any of them?
Yeah.
I mean, you use the key word there, and it's discernment. And I think the best of the best leaders that I've been around, they know what moves the needle and what doesn't. And so they, you know, Coach Kelly, he said something, he's the head coach of LSU football. He's the winningest active head football coach. You know, I mean, that's a lot of, he's had a lot of wins. And he's been a head coach for over 30 years. And, you know, I actually asked him that question after our last bowl game. So we've been together, this is our eighth season, and we've had 7-10 win seasons in a row, which is statistically really unheard of. And so I asked him, like, you know, how do you discern what's relevant? Because football operations are not as big as most companies, but there's a lot of people and a lot of things involved in it being successful. And he's like, you know, I've done every job, so I know I know what's important in each of those jobs and what's not. And I know when things are wrong, where I need to go to make an adjustment. And I think that, you know, as people get older or move up in their jobs, what made us successful when we were younger or in our earlier roles aren't the same things. They're going to be a part of, they will inform what makes us successful at the next level or at the next age, but they won't be the only things that make us able to have the level of success that we've always enjoyed. And so, you know, I have this conversation a lot with my athletes of like, hey, has your mental game matured as much as your physical game has, or as your technical game has? And a lot of times people will say no to that. They know that they're bigger, faster, stronger physically. They know that they've got better ball handling skills or can see the field better and anticipate plays better. But they will say, man, I struggle with the same things I struggled with as a junior high kid, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that because they're not able to discern what's important and what's not at this next level, and to be able to get there quickly. And so that becomes an exercise that we work a lot on, again, as athletes or as executives. What do we spend our time in? What do we allow us, what do we allow to, you know, take time, take energy, space, and attention?
Yeah,
exactly. And what do we not?
I mean, I think there's a lot to go into there, right? There's like, how do you hold yourself to that next higher standard for yourself, mm-hmm. when you know that you're not, like, you have some self-awareness that your mindset hasn't kept up with you, but you're letting it go by, right? You're still letting it slip. So I think there's a lot in. Hey, Amira here. Want to know more about what keeps uber successful women from achieving everything they want in life? Find out more at theunstoppablewoman.com. Now let's get back to the episode. And I want to go to something, a slightly different topic here, which is, you talked about working for many years with the LSU football team, and that is a very masculine environment, is it not?
Mm-hmm.
Can I get it?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Just a little confirmation there.
Yeah.
There's going to be a variety of questions all in one here. Do you find that you have to put on your masculine more when you walk in the door there and like meet their masculine with their masculine, with your masculine, right? Like to meet mm-hmm. them where they're at, and, or do you not have to do that? And then how does that fit into the energy? Cause okay, let me frame this up, even taking a little step back from this even more. You've worked many seasons with the LSU football team. That's a very masculine environment. I'm really curious about how you walk into that environment. Do you walk in your masculine, like sort of meeting their masculine with your masculine and then bringing them along? How do you balance your essence that's feminine and your essence that's masculine? What do you bring to that kind of conversation? And then when you come home and you step back into your personal life, do you have to kind of shake off any sort of amplified masculine energy that you've been really sort of bringing to the work? How does that all work out for you?
I mean, I would say that naturally I have more of that masculine energy and type and intensity and whatnot. And quite frankly, like with a baby, they are so sensitive to energy. And so like when I come home, like I'm buzzing naturally. Mm-hmm. And so I could tell, like, you know, when I was on maternity leave and like right after having a baby, like you're so full of hormones that like I was just naturally way less, you know, like not less in a bad way, just that intensity buzz was down, and she could feel that. And so like now when I come home, like she can feel that, and she's wired how I'm wired. So you get the two of us together and it's like, bzz, you know, and dad does bedtime a lot because he can get her to sleep better than I can. Because when the two of us are together, we, you know, she, even if I think I'm chill, you know, she's like, no, we're clearly doing something awesome, mom. And I want to be in on it.
That's
And
awesome.
so, yeah, so I think I'm naturally have more of that. And I think that's part of the things that's made me successful in these spaces. But I do feel like part of my purpose is to be a positive female influence in very male dominated spaces. So manufacturing is just as masculine as football is. And yet I want to be in those spaces because I think like we can, I think the world is desperately lacking leadership in general. I think we're really lacking good male leadership in general. And I think a part of that is, you know, the ability to communicate, the ability to be sensitive to different types of information, being able to collate that into like a meaningful way to like cast vision and inspire large groups to follow. And those could naturally be, you know, seen as more of the feminine energy side. So I think an injection of this in those spaces is really critical. And so knowing that, like, that's my part of my purpose for being there, and the fact that I think I match that, it's more comfortable for the men. Like I always say to people, like, you got to play the game to win the game. And if I try to go in there, like, let's talk about meditation, you know, like I don't want to talk about meditation myself. I didn't 10 years ago. Now I understand the importance of it and that it's a performance enhancing strategy that we can leverage, but we have to be able to talk about things in ways that the people that we're trying to work with can hear them. And so, you know, I would say that I come in like this and it tends to match well with them. And I think that then creates a space of trust and understanding that they think I can get them. And yet there isn't this like masculine to masculine, like clash that happens between us. And so I think it's been a really awesome journey to be able to like match from an energy perspective, but not from a collision standpoint, which then can, I think, get us further faster as individuals and as an organization, you know, to get us to talk about things like love and relationships and communication and emotions that we all
have. Do you talk to them about that? Do you talk to the...
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's great. I bet they love that. They're like, oh, a place to do this in. Yeah,
totally. Because everybody wants to, but they don't know how to. And that's why I think a lot of it is, there's a lot of educational aspect to my work of teaching people how our brain works, how it impacts how they show up, giving them tools and strategies to manage it. So, you know, I come at it more of like a task orientation approach, to use your phrase from earlier, and a pragmatic, like, it's about performance standpoint, which then, so okay.
Give us an example. I think the audience would really love, like, what is a tactical thing that you work with your players on, or the people in business that you work with, but like, what is a tactical thing that they can do to look at their mindset and really like amp up the performance?
Let's use emotions as a broad term, you know, like coming in and going straight into like analyzing the film or breaking down the sales chart and like dialing in on things, like all of that's really important. But what we know is that the brain in a positive state thinks more clearly, thinks more creatively, and it problem solves better. And so if we can get individuals to get their brains and their hearts in a positive state, we'll actually dive into the hard things better. And so, you know, at all of our meetings in the company I work with, we start all meetings with wins or celebrating like examples of our core values being lived out. And then we shift gears to get into maybe some of the deeper elements. But I mean, we start our C-suite senior level exec staff meetings with that, you know?
Yeah.
And those aren't always glorious conversations.
So let's talk about that, because I think this is one of the tools that I've used over and over and over again. It's like, how am I winning right now? Because as an entrepreneur, as someone running her own business, there's always more work, right? There's always something that's been left undone, some new goal that you have, something that you could have done more or better, right? It can be a moving goalpost. And so one of the things that I teach my clients, something very similar, like, what are the wins? And to really recognize that and not skip over that part. But I find that there are certain people that have a really hard time with that, that they think that, I'm imagining that they think that they're not being tough enough or like getting down to the nitty gritty because they're resistant to looking at how they're winning. And to me, part of that is a self-worth issue. It's like, do you have to beat yourself up and struggle in order to overcome something? And that's where you get your worth. Or like you made reference to earlier, you were brought up thinking, I am here to do something, in the, you know, like an essence of, of who you're being and worthiness. And from that place, you can look at, well, yeah, I'm winning here. And yeah, I want to create more here. Do you ever have challenges with the folks you work with being resistant to looking at how they're winning?
And the mindset that they have might be like, it has to be hard for it to be good, you know, like work should be hard. And like, is that true? I mean, that's always going to be hard, but do we need to make it harder?
Let's talk about that we can't skip over, because this is my lane, right? It's always gonna be hard, but we don't need to make it harder. So let's splice that apart, because like, because I feel like there's hard work. Here's my perspective. Maybe the answer is just yes. Tell me if you agree or disagree, or what your take on this is. Hard work doesn't have to be miserable. You can love it. You can absolutely love it. Or you can make it a freaking grind and a struggle. And that's a choice. Yes.
And some people actually aren't even working that hard and it's a miserable. And so I'm like, you're not even working that hard. So don't act like this.
Straight up. Yeah, totally.
And so I do think, there is resistance. I think that's been another... I think element of my work has been like bringing the element of brain science and like human high performance to it. And so, you know, if we talk a lot about positive coaching and having a positive coaching environment, and that's not always like, that's quite frankly, not often a part of the football coaching culture. And so there's coaches that want to give pushback on that. And my response is, well, then don't tell me how much you want to win then. Because everything that we know about humans optimizing their performance is bound up in them receiving right inputs, being able to handle stress in a positive way, being able to communicate effectively so that they can play freely and not in a state of anxiety. And so if you really want to win, then you need to understand and be open to some of these concepts. And if you're not, then that tells me that you actually really don't care about winning, in which case I don't want to work with you. And that is really how I operate. And you can, some take it and some leave it. And I think that's why Coach Kelly and I have gotten along so well. Like when we first started working together, we went through a lot of these principles, and he is smart enough and has seen enough. And honestly, that's the hard part about the field of sports psychology is like in strength and conditioning, you can see your bicep getting bigger or your 40 time getting faster. You can't necessarily see your brain becoming more confident or being able to refocus after a mistake. So there's a lot of like intuitive work and trust and understanding that needs to happen. And he has been around long enough and seen enough that he got this and has implemented it into how we run everything in the organization. And same in the company that I'm with. We have very insightful, enlightened leaders that are still like very much manufacturing guys and football coaches, you know, but they get this and we've implemented it and we've seen the results from a turnover standpoint, from an engagement survey standpoint, and from a win standpoint in both business and in football.
I love that. I love that. And in football, you know, there's more turnover there because you're having a new crew every, you know, year. So I think there's a difference when you were talking about like sort of positive coaching that perspective. I think there's a real difference between a lack of directness and being mean, right? Negative coaching is not the same thing as being super direct. You know, when I really amplified my business and I went from being just a, you know, any old coach to this sort of master level coach, you know, my business blew up. It's a multi-million dollar business, all of that. The big shift that I made internally was I'm not going to mince my words. Mm-hmm. They're paying me to save them time, to shortcut the learning experience, the skill acquisition experience, and to be someone who can compassionately, but directly, precisely, with precision, share with you, this is the tweak that you need to make.
Yeah.
That allowed me to be so much more effective. So I think it's really important. I can tell in your energy and the way you speak that you're not indirect. You're not going to mince words, but you're also going to focus on how you can improve positively, not by cutting someone down at the knees. Yeah.
Totally. My advisor at Missouri is Dr. Rick McGuire. He's a grandfather in the field of sports psychology, was the head track coach there for 37 years. And I mean, he's just a remarkable man and an influencer in track and field world and the sports psychology world. And he was really the creator of positive coaching and the framework through which, I operate in that. And he has a phrase, demanding, not demeaning. And we can be demanding, and we need to be demanding. Like high performance requires high demand, and there has to be standards, and there needs to be accountability to those standards, but we can do that without being demeaning. And then in our company, we talk about how everyone matters. And when that tagline, we started first talking about that, people, like, if we terminated them, or they lost their job, they're like, well, I thought everyone matters. And it's like, well, everyone matters so much that we're not going to allow you to be the asshole that makes everyone else's experience miserable here.
Yeah. And so I was just going to ask you about that in terms of like, how do you keep that high standard, right? Like, it's important to have high standards. What if people aren't cutting it? Right? Are you really matter of fact about it? I am, but like, how do you, if the listener right now is someone who is like, I've got a small team, they're amazing. I feel like they're great, but there's this one person who's not holding up their end of the bargain, but I feel like they've got this, if I let them go, bad things are going to happen for whatever reason, right? That they don't have someone to backfill that position, or it's going to be bad for morale. How would you speak to something like that when someone is clearly not working at the level you need them working at?
I mean, I think clarity is really important in anything that we do. And you can, like you said, you can do that compassionately. And we've had numerous examples. Our CEO, Jason Lippert, the company is called Lippert. And the CEO, Jason, he has this phrase, like, coach him up or coach him out. And, we give people, but you have to be clear with people, because many people don't know what they're actually not doing right or well enough. And so if you provide that clarity and then you give them coaching to meet those standards, then they're either going to meet them or not. And so then that becomes their choice. Are they going to choose to get better, to engage, to rise to the level or not? And then in which case they've chosen to leave the company. It's not that you're a terrible leader. And we had Jocko Willock come in and speak to our team one year, and we were talking a lot about accountability. And so one of our guys asked him, like, how do you hold guys accountable? And I think that's the problem with the conversation around accountability a lot. It's like, how do you hold people accountable? And it becomes very much like a you versus the other person, when really accountability is doing what you're supposed to do, when you're supposed to do it, to the standard that you're supposed to do it. And when people are accountable, great things can happen. And so it's more of like, what's the system to manage lack of accountability versus making people do things, because you can't really make people do things.
And that's so, where that clarity comes in, right? Because if they're not clear about what it is that they need to do, then, or if the goalpost keeps moving, right?
Correct.
Right. Then they can never succeed. And then they never feel like they never get that good mojo hit. Yeah.
And so Jocko said, if someone's not carrying the weight, like, we come alongside of them and we're like, how can I help you? And he said, because then one of two things happens. You pick up their weight and you help carry it for a while because they need to get their feet under them. And the moment they get their feet under them, they come back stronger than ever and are a part of that team. Or if they're actual slouchers, they won't come back. In which case, everyone around us knows and we cut them out. And So different look from his perspective in the military, but in than in sport, than in business. But I think that's similar. Like, how can I help you? Like, do you need clarity on what I'm asking you to do? Do you not have the knowledge, skills, or abilities to accomplish that? In which case, as leaders, it's our job to provide clarity and knowledge, skills, and ability to fulfill that clarity. And then if the person can't or won't, then it's time to coach them out. And time again inside of our business, the moment that we finally let that person go, because they've been such a high contributor, quote unquote, you hear 10 times over, oh, what took you guys so long? You know,
the exhale,
or
right?
Productivity actually goes up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, those would be some thoughts, I guess, that I'd share with someone in that situation.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Okay, before I ask my final questions, where can people find you? I know you have a podcast. I know you've written a book. I know you do speaking. Do you have a website? Let us know where, or is it social media? Where should people look for you?
Yeah, so we have a website, sulkingperformance.com. You can find the podcast. The book is called Winning the Mental Game, the Playbook for Building Championship Mindsets. And it really is a playbook that helps people understand how their brain works, how it impacts how they show up. And every chapter has science, stories, and some mental training that you can do. It's actually got 46 QR codes embedded in it that can send people to different social media sites or clips to watch and be a part of. So it's a pretty interactive book. And you can find that again on our website or on Amazon. The podcast is Building Championship Mindsets. We just launched season 14. So we've been on this journey for a while. Thank you. Thank you. And then we're on all social media platforms at Champ Mindsets. So we're on Team Follow Back. So hit us up. We'd love to hear, you know, where you're at in your journey. And, you know, like you mentioned, if there's any way that we can support your organization through keynote speeches, you know, it's the cool thing about the human brain is it doesn't matter what industry you're in, what part of the world you're in. We're all humans trying to figure out how we get better at whatever it is we're doing, whether it's, you know, doing hair. I've worked for hair companies to financial service industries, you know, to a tree. I spoke to the Tree Cutting Association before. And so it's pretty fun to be able to share these insights across those different domains as well. And I'd love to hear where you're at and see how we might be able to serve you.
Fantastic. I love it. We'll definitely put those links to all of your social media and website and book and all of that into the show notes. So you can look
awesome.
For that
Thank you.
There. Yeah, no problem. Okay. Final question, final couple questions. So what makes for an exquisite life for you? Mm-hmm. And if there's one thing that you haven't yet created as part of that exquisite life, what is it?
To me, what makes an exquisite life is, you know, my faith in God is the most important thing. And I think despite wherever you're at, it's that hope. You know, I think our world is desperately lacking hope. And so whether it's, you know, what happens after I die, kind of a hope and eternity perspective, or like what's going to be this next season and is it going to be good, you know, and hope and belief that there's plans and purposes that are meant to help you and not to harm you, is to give you hope in a future, I think is really important. And so that to me is fundamentally the thing that through the highs and lows of my life so far has been, you know, a constant anchor that has allowed me to suffer well through really hard seasons and has allowed me to truly celebrate and, you know, savor the really good, joyful, peaceful moments. And then, you know, more pragmatically, I think the people that are around you, you know, being able to choose well, you know, the people that you work with, that you're, you know, intimate with and in, you know, relationship or in friendship, you know, I think is a critical element to be able to go through those highs and lows in meaningful and more emotionally stable ways. And so all of that to me begins with how we think. And comes back to fundamentally the power of our mind and to be able to see and perceive things in meaningful ways for both the present and the future and even the past, you know, and how all those three moments of time intersect to help us show up in a more purposeful, peaceful way on a day-to-day basis. So that to me is the essence of you know, life and how to make sense of it in a meaningful way. And I think from a creation standpoint, I guess we're in the midst of creating things right now that I think are really important to me, you know, to be able to take concepts like this and not just talk about them, but to apply them in two spaces that are really important to me, sport and business. And then third, now to be on this journey of building that in our family. You know, that's what I'm excited about, and to try to continue to create this intersection of sport, business, and family life that has a rhythm that's sustainable and joyful is something that I think that we're in the midst of creating right now. And I'm excited to see that continue to evolve over time.
I love it. That sounds like a really beautiful vision for yourself. So thank you, Amber, so much for coming on the show. I think you're an inspiration for so many women who are in male-dominated fields and looking to really integrate their life, having clarity about where they're going, what they want to do, and really integrating this idea of like what it takes to be a high performer in whatever part of your life you are focused on. And you can be focused in all the areas, right? Right. You might have to shift focus every once in a while.
Yeah. Just a final thought on that. You know, I think like, what does success or what does high performer look like? And to me, that's like being who you want to be in the moment and accomplishing what you want to accomplish in the moment. And I think that when we sacrifice either one of those is when, whether outwardly people think we're succeeding or not, it's that inward perspective that becomes like, you know, oftentimes we sacrifice one of those things. We sacrifice who we want to be in the moment for an outcome, or we sacrifice an outcome for who we're trying to be. And so, you know, constantly trying to grow and evolve in ways that allows us to do both for those different seasons of life that we go through, I think is a really important endeavor, particularly as women in this world.
Yeah. And I think the thing that gets into in so many women's ways, people's ways, is this idea that you can't have it all, right? Like you have to compromise. But if you start with this intention, this decision, this perspective that I want to be who I am, first you have to know who you are, but you want to be who you are and have the outcomes that you want. If you hold that as your standard and you don't compromise on that and you keep that vision in place, that's when the magic happens, right? That's where things get to. And I will also say on my experience with that is that there's been trial and error with it. It's like, when is this cooperation? When is this being open to opportunities, different perspective, different ideas? And when is this compromising who I'm being? And my experience with that over the years is that you have to learn that to have the discernment. Like you have to get it on the field of play. There's not just this intellectual concept that you can read about or learn about. You have to then, it's applied knowledge. It's a lived experience of this. And you have to go, oh, I failed there. That was not who I wanted to be. In order to get this, I might've gotten the outcome, but I don't really feel good about this. This is who I want to be. Okay. I'm going to go again. Okay. This time I did a little bit better. And
that absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So Amber, thank you so much for being on the show. You've added so much great perspective. I think the audience is going to love this. I hope they all check out your work and seek you out and utilize the concepts that we've really worked with. And I love this last one that we were just talking about being who you know yourself to be. Clarity is uber important there, and getting the outcomes that you want, like holding yourself accountable to those outcomes while being the person you want to be. Such a beautiful last concept. So thank you, Amber. So good to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Most ambitious women I work with already have good lives, possibly even great. But there's often this one area that is fine as is, but not yet exquisite. And yet, when we unlock that one area, they access a whole new level. I want to personally invite you to book a complimentary call with me and discover what that unlock could do for you. These calls are for women who have done at least $1 million or more in their business or executive career
and are ready for an exquisite life inside and out. You can book our conversation at theunstoppablewoman.com/connect.